children. What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, Mothers and Fathers Alliance, saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health struggles, including addiction. If you know someone that needs a referral for a therapist, an inpatient or outpatient program, please give us a call. Our number is 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number. You may want to jot it down for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, or someone you usually sit next to in shul. Again, our number is 718-758-0400. All calls are kept strictly confidential. We are also still offering Zoom parent groups, and we have Sunday night for blended families, second marriages, bringing up each other's children, and that is with Yeshaya Krause. Monday night, Dr. Debbie Ackerman. Tuesday night, Dr. Shmuel Brachfeld. Wednesday night, Dr. Ben Sion Twersky. And the first Tuesday of every month is Dr. Trish Attia in person in Brooklyn. And we have Cheryl Friedman in the Five Towns on Wednesday night. So if you want to join Parent Zoom group, please give us a call, 718-758-0400. So we are in holiday season. Everyone's getting ready to make jelly donuts, all kinds of donuts. I see them in every window of every 3M bakery that I pass by. And all the magazines are offering wonderful recipes also. So we are coming up to 8 days of donut season. And we wanted to talk about, in general, about good eating habits. And tonight, I'm very, very happy to have on with us Gila Glassberg, who actually is a certified intuitive eating counselor. And she's going to tell you all about how she got involved with intuitive eating. I'd like to welcome you on tonight. Thank you for making the time. How are you, Gila?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, thank you. And I think it's important that you first give us the definition of intuitive eating, please.
Sure. So Intuitive Eating is a book. It's also a nutrition methodology. It was created by two registered dietitians, Evelyn Triboli and Elise Rush, in the 1990s. And since then, it has been updated and it's now in its fourth edition. Intuitive eating has been, there's already over 125 studies to validate intuitive eating. So basically, intuitive eating is an eating framework which takes into account the body and the mind. So it's not a diet at all. It's really about understanding the cues of your body, whether it's your hunger or fullness cues or it's your emotional cues, and figuring out when you're hungry, when you're full, or when maybe you're using food to cope with your emotions and why you're doing that. It's very much a self-care and self-compassion framework where we try to understand why we're doing those things and try to maybe replace it with healthier behaviors, but it has nothing to do with shaming ourselves or thinking we don't have enough willpower. It has to really do with understanding why we eat the way that we eat and learning to take care of ourselves and learning even how our biology works in terms of hunger and fullness, and taking away all the shame and stigma that comes with regular mainstream diets and even like all the weight stigma that we have now. So it's really, it's something that I really believe in, and I've seen amazing things with my clients, and I myself went through the process. So that's basically in a nutshell what intuitive eating is.
So do you feel comfortable speaking about, you say you went through the process? Do you want to talk about your own journey, please?
Sure. Okay. So I always say that I'm the fourth of nine. I grew up out of town, Scranton, Pennsylvania. And I always say that my mother didn't make sure that we ate quote unquote healthy. She just made sure that we ate. So I grew up with like a very chilled mentality around food. I was never put on a diet as a kid, and we just had a lot of like frozen type of food, like chicken nuggets, French fries, tater tots. And I never really thought much about it. I ate when I was hungry. I stopped when I was full. I definitely grew up in a house that was very into food. We talked about food. We enjoyed food, but I never really thought about it past that. When I was in ninth grade, I moved to Teaneck. I boarded in Teaneck. I went to high school in Muncie, and lo and behold, there was a kosher pizza store down the block. And I was maybe at a kosher pizza store 5 to 10 times in my life before then. I lived in a really small town, no kosher restaurants, no kosher takeout at all. And I started going to the pizza store all the time. It was like super exciting for me. I really enjoyed it. And I would say halfway through like my ninth grade year, it became very, very evident to me that that's like not something that girls in high school do. A lot of the girls in my class were very into dieting and very into being super skinny. And I even had a friend that ended up hospitalized with an eating disorder. There was a lot of body shaming and a lot of diet talk. And it was just one of those things that just became very normal in my school, in the culture of my school. And I'm sure I know a lot of people go through the same thing in high school. And so I started to diet just like most, you know, ninth or 10th grade girls. And I started trying all different types of diets. And we even had like diet competitions. And it was like such a big part of my ninth and 10th grade year in high school. But what I realized was that after I would go on a diet, I would start obsessing about food. So let's say I was restricting carbs or I was restricting sweets or whatever it was, I found myself being able to do that for a week or two. But then after that amount of time, I would start really craving the food or thinking about the food all the time. And I felt like it had really taken over my head. And then I would, of course, end up breaking the diet and feeling so much shame and feeling like I had no willpower or self-control. And I was really struggling with that until I realized I learned like a bunch of other unhealthy habits of like really not eating enough. And that's when I really lost a lot of weight. And instead of getting like concerned looks, I really got a lot of compliments and accolades for like all my accomplishments and my willpower. Meanwhile, I was eating way too little calories. I was not okay at all. I was thinking about food all the time. But I was also really, really restricting. And I thought I was amazing. And I thought I had so much willpower. But really, that's what happens is that the disordered eating or the eating disorder sort of takes over and you feel like you have so much control, but it really is controlling you. And I was very lucky. I went away on a trip with two of my friends in 11th grade. We went to California for a winter break and they really saw the way that I was eating or not eating. And they confronted me and it sort of like hit me in the face. Like, wow, this is really not healthy. Even though like I was getting so many compliments, it was like, this obviously isn't healthy because like I'm just thinking about food all the time and I feel really weak and I have a hard time concentrating. And it sort of like, I guess, whipped me into shape. Like I realized like what I was doing was not okay. I still remained like, quote unquote, like the healthy one. And I knew when I was in 11th grade that I wanted to become a dietitian. So fast forward, I went through all the schooling to become a registered dietitian. And it was very, very hard. It's a very hard program to get into. It's a very hard program to complete. I had my first baby, then my second baby while I was in school. And then I started working in the field of nutrition. My first job was in a nursing home. And I would say right away, a month in or 2 months in, I started feeling really I guess, depressed. I felt really bad about my decision to become a dietitian, because what I felt like I was really the diet police. I didn't feel like I was there to empower people to make better choices. I felt like I was there to tell them what to do. I felt like I was in charge of their body as opposed to teaching them like what their body's trying to tell them and figure it out. And I thought maybe it was just the nursing homes that I didn't like, so, or the job that I didn't like. So I switched to a different job and then a different job and then a different job until I realized, oh my, I made a really big decision. I mean, horrible mistake to become a dietitian. And I just started like doing my own research. I didn't want to be a private practice dietitian because I didn't want to put people on diets. Like, I didn't want to make people go through what I went through in high school. I knew that that didn't resonate with me. And at that point, I found intuitive eating. And when I read the intuitive eating book, it really just hit home. And I had that, again, an aha moment of like, that's exactly what happened to me in high school when I was dieting. And even at that point, even though I wasn't on an official diet, I was very restrictive. And I realized that I did tend to think about food more than I wanted to. And I understand why. Like, the more that we restrict, the more we think about food on a biological level. Our brains will get us to think about food more when we are restricting. And so basically, I read the book and I took the training, and then I quit my nursing home job and I started my own practice. And that was about 5 years ago, and I never looked back. I've been doing that since.
Wow, so Gila,
Yeah.
there are different definitions for eating disorders, like you mentioned. There's disordered eating, then there are eating disorders, and then there's intuitive eating. So, can you offer my listeners the three different definitions so that we can be clear if somebody recognizes in their own life that they're struggling with an eating disorder, then they can call MASS and we will give them a therapist to be able to help them with that. So if you could just give us the definition, please.
Sure. So disordered eating and eating disorders, they exist on a spectrum. So somebody who has all anyone who has an eating disorder slash disordered eating will be engaging in restrictive behaviors or binging behaviors, but it depends on the frequency and the intensity. So the way that I like to think of it is, the way that my supervisor, Jessica Setnick, explained it to me, is sort of like thinking about it in terms of like headspace. Right, so we all have like, let's say, 100% of headspace a day, and somebody who's struggling with disordered eating will think about food, let's say, 20 to 60% of their day, and someone with an eating disorder will think about food 60 to 110% of their day, and 110 means like they even dream about food, and obviously we all have to think about food. Let's say that's the 20 to 30% that we have to think about food because we have to go grocery shopping and we have to cook for our families. But once it takes over more than that 20 to 30%, it really decreases our quality of life. So although, like I always say, like you can be on a diet for the rest of your life and weigh and measure your food, but it will come at a very high cost that you don't have headspace to take care of your family or to take care of your job or to take care of yourself. And an eating disorder is just much more intense and much, much more dangerous, where somebody would be eating very, very little calories or binging and purging, like bulimia, like much more frequently. And it's really affecting their daily living. Like, they can't go to school, they can't function, they can't go out with their friends. And anorexia is the same thing. They're really not doing well mentally, physically, nutritionally. Like, they just are, their labs are out of whack. They can't function day to day. They can't go to work, they can't go to school. They're eating very little calories, or again, they're binging and purging, or they're just have binge eating disorder where their binges are just very frequent, like every single day or multiple times a day. So it depends on really the intensity and the frequency. And intuitive eating is not a modality that helps somebody with an active eating disorder, because intuitive eating is about getting in touch with your internal cues, let's say of hunger and fullness. And someone with an eating disorder does not have those cues. So let's say somebody is really struggling with anorexia, and they start to feel the physical sensation of fullness after eating 100 calories. They're not actually full. They just have turned off, they've just messed up their hunger and fullness cues. So they can't listen to those cues. They really just have to be on a strict eating regimen until they restore their calories, and then they could switch to intuitive eating. And intuitive eating is a great modality for someone with disordered eating. But once it becomes in the eating disorder range, we don't recommend using intuitive eating until you're in a healthier state.
Thank you. So let's discuss what's the difference between mindful eating and intuitive eating.
That's a great question. So mindful eating is a part of intuitive eating. Mindful eating just doesn't include all the 10 principles of intuitive eating. So intuitive eating consists of 10 principles. They're all designed to help someone have a healthy relationship with food. And let's say one of the components of intuitive eating is being mindful, right? So like checking in with your body when you're hungry, when you're full, really paying attention to the sensation of eating. So what the texture of the food is, the taste, the smell, getting, you know, like making the eating environment more pleasant, not being on your phone, not being distracted. But intuitive eating has a lot more principles than just that component. So with intuitive eating, let's say, reject the diet mentality, or not using food to cope with your emotions, challenging the food police, a gentle nutrition, joyful movement, respecting your body. These are, I know them by heart, but making peace with food, right? So mindfulness is kind of like a component of intuitive eating, but it's not as extensive as the intuitive eating model.
Can you share the first stage of intuitive eating with my listeners, please?
Sure. So the authors of intuitive eating, they always say that there's no specific order of the 10 principles. And every client's very different, every person's very different, but I will share like a general process that I've tried on many clients, and then I always end up like, you know, going where meeting the client where they're at. But in general, I think intuitive eating, one of the first steps is the first principle, which is rejecting the diet mentality. So if I'm meeting with a client for the first time, I will ask them questions like, tell me your earliest childhood memory around food or body image, or what was the feeding dynamic like in your home? Did everyone eat dinner together? Was everyone on a diet? Were there a lot of comments about your body, about other people's bodies, right? And so when I speak to a client who's in their 30s or 40s or 50s and they go all the way back to that memory, very often it's like when they're 5 years old, 10 years old, 15 years old. So they will tell me, I call it like their timeline. So they'll tell me like, it all started when I was 10 and now they're, let's say, 50. So we unpack like 40 years of diet culture, diet culture history, or just dieting history of like, yeah, I was put on a diet when I was 10. And I had gained weight, and like just explaining that that's so normal when a girl's going through puberty, or even a boy, like it's very normal to put on weight. And a lot of times people freak out about it and it makes them feel a lot of body shame and they go on a diet or they do other things that are harmful for themselves. And then it tends to spiral from restricting to binging, or being on a diet to binging, yo-yo dieting. Your weight goes up, then your weight goes down, then it goes up even higher, right? So I'm saying this isn't everyone's story, but many people who come to me, this is like their story in one way or another. And I always tell them, I refer back to that first session very often, because if somebody's really struggling to reject the diet mentality or to accept their body, even if they really, really want to lose weight, I'll just keep explaining to them, right, you've been dieting for 40 years. It's really hard to change a belief system. Like, give yourself some slack. Like, it will take time to really make that change, even though you could know something in your head and still have a really hard time implementing it. So I like to start with rejecting the diet mentality. And then I like to talk about hunger and fullness. I show my clients a scale of 0 to 10, and 0 is like ravenously starving and 10 is painfully stuffed. And I explain that you could feel hunger in many different levels. It doesn't, like, a lot of times, especially chronic dieters tend to only eat when they're really, really, really hungry, but we tend to overeat when we start eating when we're too hungry. So just explaining to them the difference between meal hunger and snack hunger and different levels of hunger, different levels of fullness. And I'll have them really practice that for a week or two. I have them set alarms for every 2 hours or every 3 hours. It's not forever, just for a few weeks. Sometimes I have them track their food if it's not too triggering for them. And they don't just track what they ate. They track what time they ate and how hungry they were and how full they became. And this tends to really help people have a framework for why they're eating when they're eating. And instead of shaming themselves and thinking, you know, they're out of control, it really very often has to do with not realizing when they're hungry until they're ravenous and then binging or feeling out of control. Because that's what our bodies will do when we feel starved. We'll like think about it on a fast day. We'll think about food all day. And we'll when we're done eating, we're usually really, really, really stuffed. So people tend to do that when they're in the diet mentality of like, I better not eat until I'm really hungry. And then they tend to overeat and feel out of control. So that's sort of like the beginning steps of intuitive eating.
Thank you. So Lila, we're coming up to Hanukkah, and in general, it is holiday season for so many out there. What do you hear that's struggling, you know, what are the clients struggling with from your point of view?
So Hanukkah could definitely be scary because people tend to feel afraid of donuts or latkes or fried food. There is also a component of like being around family a lot or being around people, a lot of people that you might not be with. So right off the bat, I talk about this with probably every holiday, like big holiday that comes up, whether it's like Sukkot or Pesach, is I always have clients come up with some sort of a self-care plan. So that includes like, are you eating every 2 to 3 hours? Are you eating foods that you enjoy? Are you moving your body? Are you still seeing your therapist? If you're not, do you have another way to process your emotions? Are you journaling? Are you meditating? Are you speaking to a friend? Even like boundaries come up a lot. Like, do you have to go to that Hanukkah party? A lot of times I hear clients tell me, I just like stood by the pastry table the whole time, the donuts and everything. And when we pull it apart, it's like, yeah, I just hate being in that person's house. They really trigger me. They make me upset. They overstep their boundaries. Right. So like, I always say it's like more preempting the trigger, like understanding why you might like what happened last Hanukkah. Why was it so hard? Why do you feel like you overate? And again, with a lot of like grace and self-compassion and saying nothing's perfect, and we can learn from every experience, but as much as we could control, we try to control that. So again, that's using a lot of the principles of honoring your hunger, respecting your fullness, understanding which foods that you really enjoy, not always saying yes to everyone's Hanukkah party if you don't really have to, making sure you're moving your body, and of course, enjoy your donuts, but also from, you know, just to keep people calm and explain to them that it's really only 8 days. And even if you ate a donut every single day of those 8 days, you will still be okay. So I think, you know, making people feel less afraid of food is actually the way to go, as opposed to making people feel more afraid of food.
So it's also about not having the guilt when you're having the donut.
Yes, exactly. Because the more guilt you feel when you're eating, the less you enjoy the food. And, you know, we know this from like CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, where thoughts and feelings and behaviors are all connected. The more guilty we feel about something, the more we tend to have a hard time stopping to do it, which is ironic. But when I tell that to people, they realize like, right, I never guilted myself out of something. It always just makes me feel worse and less motivated. So like we say in intuitive eating that like guilt and shame should never be on your plate. That's like the most toxic thing. And like if somebody ate a donut and they say, I feel so guilty, we say like, did you steal the donut? Did you kill someone for the donut? Because like there's really no moral value around food. So I think that we've placed a lot of moral value around food, which has created a lot of shame and guilt around food and body image. But even just like taking the shame out of it can make a really big difference in someone's life.
And I just want to ask, can intuitive eating and weight loss, can they both coexist?
So weight loss is never really a goal of intuitive eating, because we try to put like weight loss on the back burner to really try to focus on those internal cues. Sometimes people do lose weight, Because they are changing the way they eat, because maybe they used to go, you know, they used to be more like restricting to binging, or maybe they just didn't exercise because they thought, what's the point of exercising if I'm not going to get so skinny? And explaining to them the health benefits of exercise totally outside of manipulating their body. So they might just end up changing the way that they eat and the way that they're moving, and that can lead to weight loss, but it doesn't always. So there's no, it's not really about weight loss at all. So it's not, if somebody comes to me and they say, I want to lose weight, I don't tell them, oh, I can't work with you, because I understand the desire to lose weight. I say it's like, kind of like the desire to become a millionaire or win the lottery, right? Like in 2023, everybody wants to be thin. I understand it. But I think it's important to, like, when you work through intuitive eating, to try to put it on the back burner, will help somebody actually make peace with food.
Wow. So it's so important to be aware of what we are eating, and the intuitive eating way works for so many. It's definitely worth a try to look into. And like you said, the book is wonderful to read. You want to give out the name of the book again, please?
Sure. The name of the book is Intuitive Eating, fourth edition, written by Evelyn Trivoli and Elise Rush.
And anyone that wants to reach out to Gila Glasper, please give us a call at 718-758-0400. And I personally will make sure that Gila gets back to you. Well, thank you, Gila, for coming on, and hope to have you on again soon.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And I want to wish everyone a very good evening and a beautiful Shabbos. And always remember, hang in, hold on, and virtually still hug tight. Tonight's show is in honor of all the Chayalim. May they be safe and get all the hostages home. An Yisrael Chai. Have a good night.
Order in the court! Order in the court!
Did anybody call for a lawyer? Welcome to Let's Lawyer Up, a weekly 30-minute program about life and law. Let's Lawyer Up is hosted by New York's top lawyer, Zaki Tamir, managing partner at Tamir Marcus LLP, and me, Leah D. You can find us here on WNSR, 620 AM, every Thursday evening from 9:30 to 10 p.m., or click into our Facebook page, Let's Lawyer Up, and click on the Listen Now link. Tune in, click in, and become a fan. Let's Lawyer Up is sponsored by Cambridge Tax and Estate Corp, providing easy-to-understand information about wills, trusts, and estate plans. Call 855-GET-A-WILL, that's 855-GET-A-WILL, to set up a free 10-minute phone consultation. Did anybody call for a lawyer? Let's Lawyer Up every Thursday, right here, 9:30 to 10 p.m.
Are you feeling lost in the maze of Medicare? Are all those ads that you see and hear confusing? I'm Medicare Menachem Friedman, and I can help you make the right choice. Over 15 years ago, I helped my grandparents navigate the complex world of Medicare. They were confused, but I brought them clarity, and I can do the same for you. I host countless Medicare educational events, breaking down the ABCs and Ds of Medicare. No jargon, just plain talk. Wondering when to enroll? I can advise you at the proper time to enroll at the right moment so you can avoid penalties and make informed choices. If you're confused about Medicare supplement plans with Part D Rx versus Medicare Advantage, I will help you weigh those options. I don't work for Medicare, but work for you. Now is the time. Until December 7th, you can change your plan. Fear shouldn't drive your choices. I will empower you to make clear and concise decisions. Say goodbye to that Medicare anxiety. I'll help you find the plan that fits your unique situation. From New York to Florida to California, I'm licensed in over 25 states. Please connect with me, Medicare Menachem Friedman, today. Call 347-738-6846. That's 347-738-6846, or you can find me on the web at mindfulmedicaresolutions.com, because your Medicare journey deserves a trusted companion.
You are listening to
TalkLine Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network, the voice of the Jewish community.